So now it's episode 6.
Hooray!
Hooray! The tiebreaker!
Yeah, we've broken the tie and suck it.
Suck it, Issa and Josh.
Yeah.
We beat ya.
Yeah.
Episode 6.
Cosmopolitan Hour rules. Naked vegan.
Drools.
Yeah.
Now we can retire and...
and live off of our earnings.
And fade into obscurity.
Hooray! So, welcome to episode 6 of the Cosmopolitan Hour. We are going to have a little more structure today, I believe, than we did
in theory
last week.
And we're louder this week.
We're louder.
Because we figured out what the problem was last week.
That's true. And we're recording at my place again, so that means that it's less likely that I'm going to get my ass kicked by...
Yeah, a very rude dog.
But I suppose it's still possible. She could be, like, trotting over to San Francisco right now as we speak.
She's, like, running and going, Jordan!
Exactly.
I'm coming for you!
But I don't know, Goblin might be able
to
take her.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So.
Although I do have to say, if you were going to get your ass kicked by Molly, today is the day, because A, she's clean, she just got a bath, and B, her anal glands are empty, so.
Hooray!
Yeah.
I had no idea that dogs even had those things.
Neither did I until I adopted Molly.
So.
And I know all too well now. Oh my god.
So what's the deal? Explain for our listeners, who I'm sure are...
dying to know about dogs' anal glands. Well, the anal glands is where the scent comes from. So that's why dogs always sniff each other's butts when they meet. Because they're sniffing their anal glands.
Yay.
And normally dogs are supposed to kind of empty them when they poop. Because, you know, they're in that general area and that sort of happens. But some dogs, the way they're physically set up, they're not able to do that on their own. So you have to either do it for them. Or, as I prefer to do, take them to the vet and have the vet do it for you.
Oh, dear.
Because I found a great low-cost vet clinic in Oakland that does it for $11. And $11 every 6 weeks not to have to stick my finger up my dog's butt is a bargain.
Yeah, that's not bad at all.
Yeah, so, well...
Oh, okay. We have cats trying to jump onto the production area. So there we go. He's going to step on the computer. Don't do that. Come on. Sorry.
So, yeah, see, animals run amok no matter where we record. So it's fine.
Yeah, there
we're
we go.
Good.
There we go.
So now you know all about a dog's anal glands.
And so, welcome. That's our overture.
And now you know.
Yeah, totally. I don't think cats have anything disgusting like that, do they?
Cats have lots of disgusting things.
I mean, I guess they do shit in a box indoors. Yeah. That's not so nice.
And they squirt out their butts if they're boys.
That's true. Though Goblin doesn't.
That's good.
He's neutered, so maybe maybe that's why.
Actually, that reminds me of a quick story, and then we should get to our awesome feminist issue of the week.
Yes.
My dad is a retired firefighter, and one day he got a call to go to this woman's house. Some people don't know this, but when you dial 911, often the first people to respond are the fire department. So even if your house is not on fire, or if you need an ambulance, or if you need the cops, often the fire department is actually the first to show up. So this woman called 911 because her lights went out, apparently. For some reason, the fire department was called out because this woman's electricity was gone. I don't know why, but my dad was...
It's the culture of fear.
Exactly. Terrorism!
Yeah.
So my dad got called out, and this woman was what we would nowadays recognize as a hoarder. She had many, many, many cats inside her small house, and my dad said when you walked in, I mean, luckily he was, like, covered in his heavy-duty fire gear, so he was totally safe from the icky cooties, but he said when you walked in, it was like a shag rug, and it was like walking in a swamp, because it was soaked through with cat urine.
Ugh.
And he said the smell was atrocious, but they figured out what had happened was one of the male cats had, like, backed right up to an electrical socket and squirted into it and shorted out the whole house.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's so disgusting. I am extremely glad that Goblin has never done that. Thank you, Goblin.
So, you know, that's your question to ponder for the week. Would you rather deal with anal glands, or would you rather deal with your cat piss shorting out your entire house's electrical system?
Right, right. I mean, I wonder what the repair bill on that kind of thing is. Probably more than $11.
Well, the firemen were there, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, it was a lot more than $11.
Mm.
Well put.
Yeah. Okay, so win for the dogs on that one.
Yes.
So, the feminist issue of the week.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So I sent you this really good article, and you got really into it and had a lot of insights, and I would love to hear your insights.
Okay.
Teach me.
All right, well, I can spew here for a minute. So I guess our feminist issue of the week is chick flicks.
Yes.
And that's what the article was about. And
or romantic comedies.
Right.
As they're called these days.
Right, right.
And who was...
To be PC.
Is in The Guardian.
Guardian.co.uk, and the author's name is Kira Cochran, and the name of the article is Where Have All the Good Women Gone? This is in case you are an overachiever and want to look this up. And the gist of it is that romantic comedies and chick flicks nowadays are really anti-feminist, and that the way that they're made is just really hostile towards women, and the way that women are portrayed is really awful and, you know, anti-feminist and shitty, and that we need a return to the days of old when films like It Happened One Night and His Girl Friday were being made. And Ms. Cochran says that female characters in these kinds of movies today are always stupid and they don't care about their careers and all they want to do is get married and, you know, blah, 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 and they... Oh, what else? There's lots of things wrong with them, and they're just basically these pretty idiots who, you know, get shit on by all kinds of men and keep coming back for more.
And so some of the films that Kira Cochran discusses in this article, or some of the modern films are like Confessions of a Shopaholic,
yeah.
He's Just Not That Into You. Mm-hmm. I think she mentioned Sex in the City once.
Yeah, she does. And then she mentions positively Mamma Mia. And this is where I would like to start my divergence from Ms. Cochran's opinion.
Go for it.
Mamma Mia is, to the best of my knowledge, a musical based on the music of ABBA,
mm-hmm.
which the story of which is essentially a young, pretty young, like she can't be, at least in the movie, I mean, she can't be supposed to be more than about 23 years old. So a young woman mm-hmm. gets married, and she doesn't know who her father is, and she wants to find it out for the wedding. And so she gets the three men who all could potentially be her father to come out to her wedding, and she's going to somehow try and figure it out, and then figure out who her dad is for the wedding. And frankly, I don't think I could think of a less feminist movie plot than that. I mean, like, this is, I mean... For one, we're really, when we say that this is a really feminist positive movie, we're really reinforcing that stereotype of women as these, you know, simpering, oh, we love romance and marriage and
that's
musicals.
True.
And I have to say, as a woman, fuck musicals. I hate musicals, and I am really offended by the notion that this musical, because it happened to have, I think, a female director and a couple of female crew members, that this is somehow, you know, the emblematic feminist movie of the year, when...
I should point out to our listeners that Jordan has smoke coming out of her ears right now.
I don't know. I
did want to ask you about Mamma Mia, though, because it's a slightly... You know, you are definitely my go-to person when I think of somebody who hates musicals. Like, you're the first person I think
Thank
of.
You.
Even though I know many people who dislike musicals, I'm always like, Jordan's the top of the list. But Mamma Mia is kind of different because it was a musical written around pre-existing pop music.
Yeah, and I...
And, I mean, you gotta give it to ABBA. I mean, come on, give it up for ABBA, but... I can understand the annoyance of seeing people, like, miming out what's going on and having those big, like... you know, big smiles, everybody, it's showtime. And so, yeah, I'm just wondering if Mamma Mia occupies a slightly higher ring of hell for you than other musicals.
Well, you know, I saw the first 10 minutes of Mamma Mia because Mike, my husband, loves musicals. He thinks they are, quote, delightful. So I've seen it, and, you know, I like ABBA, mm-hmm. okay. Like, I'm not huge into them or anything, but I do think that their music is definitely a big step above most musicals' music. But... Mm-hmm. Oh my god, were the characters and was the acting ever annoying? It was terrible. And just like, the girl who was getting married was acting like she was about 14 years old.
Yeah.
And, you know, she had her two best friends and they were jumping up and down and fawning all over, you know, oh, wedding, this is the most important thing. Yeah. There's no mention of her having a career at all. I mean, she's not
right
old enough to have a career. And then the whole thing about this being a feminist movie when really it's revolving around this girl's giant wedding on a Greek island. I'm sorry, I fail to see the feminism. Yeah. Oh, wait, it's because the movie didn't judge Meryl Streep's character for having had sex with three men in rapid succession, apparently.
Right.
So all you need to do is say that it's okay for women to have sex with lots of people and you're automatically feminist, I guess.
Well, but in that case, what's his face? Oh, God, now I forget his name.
Well, that makes a lot of feminists. I mean, Ted Nugent's probably a feminist now.
hell, Maury Povich. Yeah. That's the name. That makes Maury Povich a feminist, because well, every damn day he's got at least five women on his show who've slept with several men and need to find out who their baby's father
is. Well, there you go. So, Maury, huge, huge, groundbreaking feminist.
Yeah.
But
Montel Williams.
Yeah.
Montel and Maury.
And Jerry Springer, probably.
Yeah.
Though Jerry Springer, I think, actually...
Does he do the DNA stuff?
I don't know. I think he actually is a feminist. Jerry Springer was touted as being one of the most, like, brilliant political minds of this half of the century.
I wouldn't doubt it, actually. I mean, he's definitely got some sleeves going on, but I think he's...
Well, he was mayor.
Yeah.
And was, like, people were saying his name in the same sentence as John F. Kennedy. Like, that's how talented this guy was politically. And then he...
And just think where John F. Kennedy would be today if he hadn't been assassinated.
Who knows? Who knows?
He'd be trumping Ellen in the ratings, that's for sure.
Probably. His talk show would be awesome.
Yeah.
Anyways. But, so moving, like... So I guess my first beef with this article is that it, you know, it says... It holds up as this example of a positive feminist movie, this shitty musical.
It is really kind of frothy, isn't it?
It's really
lace. And
it's a puff piece essentially. Mm-hmm. And the virtues that make it feminist are that a couple people who worked on it have vaginas, and that, you know, it says it's okay for people to sleep around, women to sleep around. So that sucks. But I think the thing that really bugged me about this article, and this is the one that it took me a little bit longer to kind of figure what it was that was bugging me, is that I don't necessarily agree with the notion that a woman needs to have a high-powered career and always be thinking about her job and have lots of money in the bank in order to be a positive feminist role model.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that this author really said. I guess that's fine that you can... to say that if you're a successful writer for The Guardian. But, you know, I suppose maybe it offends my pride as a failed career woman myself. But I spoke with Jennifer about mm-hmm. this, and we both kind of agreed that it was probably more feminist to be doing work in your community and, you know, showing the girls in your community that they can, you know, play basketball or play guitar or, you know, do whatever and be valuable members of the community, and that there's things that are valuable about them more than their boobs and their pocketbooks, which is kind of what this new thing is. It basically says, don't value women for their boobs, value them for their careers and their power suits. And I just don't see that as being a terribly revolutionary thing. So when I hear people bitching about, you know, the main character in the Shopaholic movie, who's apparently an idiot and blah, 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 I don't know. I mean, not every woman's born a genius, right? Some women are born idiots, and I've run into them. I mean, it, and so why can they not be feminists? Why can they not be, why do they, what's wrong with them? I mean, they're idiots, but what's, why is that, why are they worth less as women? Uh-huh. Because they don't have a high IQ, right. Or because they don't have this bloodthirsty, cutthroat corporate ambition in them. I don't see those as being things that are terribly feminist in and of themselves, or terribly feminist when women do them, either. So, I don't know. I liked this article because it made me think, and the thing about musicals made me mad, and I like to get mad, but, I don't know. I think I'm going to come down on the side of not agreeing with it.
All right.
Yeah, though I did agree that the, Scarlett Johansson's character in He's Just Not That Into You, which I saw on a Monday afternoon matinee, she was kind of a hoe, and I'm not into watching, busty blonde bombshell characters hit on married men and then have the married men leave their wives for them.
Yeah.
It's not my favorite. But, so I agree with that. I didn't like that. So...
Cool. Well, I thought it was a good article. I mean, I haven't seen most of the movies in question. I haven't seen any of the, the more contemporary movies, and I haven't seen many of the classic movies. But yeah, in general, I'm disappointed with how women are treated in film. But yeah, I think your point about Mamma Mia is really a good point. Yeah, it's not exactly the kind of film that I would look at and be like, this is a great feminist movie for young girls to watch. But I do have a great movie for young women to watch, which I watched this weekend, which is called Penelope.
Ooh.
With Christina Ricci. And it's kind of like it's like a little fairy tale. It's about this family that upsets somebody, and so... They have a curse placed on them, and the curse is that the next female child born into that family will have the face of a pig. And so the next female child ends up being Christina Ricci. So she has like a little pig snout and pig ears, but of course she's like beautiful, gorgeous Christina Ricci everywhere else. And the way to break the curse, or at least so she's been told her whole life, is to find somebody who'll marry her for who she is, and then the curse will be broken. And she's part of a very wealthy family, so they're, like, trying to... Oh, it has to be somebody from her, level. It's, like, somebody in your society accepting you for who you are that will break the curse, or something like that. So it has to be a blue blood, like, old money, just like her. And, so it was a cool movie because I felt like a lot of it was talking about, Christina Ricci's character didn't necessarily want... she was conflicted because people, told her that she looked terrible and blah, 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 and her mom kept, like, pushing her to get married. But in the end, like, the movie's ultimately about her character deciding that she's okay with looking like a pig, mm-hmm. and falling in love with somebody who genuinely does care about her for who she is. So I like that aspect of it. What I didn't like was, of course, in the end, she inevitably... loses the pig face and gets to be beautiful, gorgeous Christina Ricci and everything. Everybody lives happily ever after. But aside from that, I thought it was a really cute movie. And surprisingly, there's not enough movies like this, but it's, it was a pretty good message for girls. And, it definitely had some of that, like, I don't see why getting married is so important kind of thing, like for her mom, who's played amazingly by Catherine O'Hara. She's a brilliant, hilarious woman.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah.
And Canadian, I believe, too.
I think she is, yeah. Yeah. And her dad is played by Richard E. Grant, who is awesome. And so her mom is, like, putting all this pressure on her to get married, and, because if she gets married, then she'll be beautiful, and the curse will be lifted and everything. So it was cool. It was kind of a, she kind of refutes both beauty myths and, the idea that a woman should put everything of her essence into her wedding day. And of course some of the beauty myth kind of like has a little backlash in the end when she gets to be pretty again. But I think overall, you know, it's like it had this great feminist message about, you know, not about like, yeah, you want to find true love, but it's not like getting married is the most important thing in your life. And, you know, as long as you're comfortable with yourself, then that's all that matters. And it's actually, I'm pretty sure it's pretty kid friendly. Like there's mm-hmm. not like any sex scenes or swearing scenes. Reese Witherspoon's also in it. Bunch of people. James McAvoy from The Last King of Scotland. And the other thing I really loved about the movie was Peter Dinklage was in it. And mm-hmm. do you know who he is?
I probably would see a picture of him.
His big breakthrough movie was The Station Agent. He's a dwarf actor.
Oh,
and so he,
yes.
What I loved about the movie is, like, you know, obviously he's a dwarf. There's no getting around it. But there weren't any cheap shots about his height. And, like, in the movie, his character has a missing eye, and they make jokes about the eye patch, but they never make, short jokes or, like, make any... Like, there's no... You know, if you were just listening to the movie, you would never know that he was, like, a short guy. It's just a non-issue. It's like...
Right.
They just held auditions, and this one guy showed up who happened to be a dwarf. They just happened to give him the role. It's not part of the role. And I just love when... You have a movie like that where they don't have to make an exception for the actor who's playing the role. Like, you know, they don't have to explain why he looks this way, or they don't have to explain, you know what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I do. I like that too. So basically he's the opposite of the other popular, well, one of the other popular little person actors, Vern Troyer.
Yes.
Who is...
Yeah, who's made, like, an entire career on, like, get it? I'm little!
Yeah.
Which, you know, I can't blame him, because I know it's hard if you're different.
Right.
To,
yeah.
I mean, even if you look exactly like everybody else in Hollywood, it's hard to get a big break. So I think, you know, I definitely appreciate what different-looking people go through in order to get into the movie business. But I, you know, I kind of tip my hat to the filmmakers of Penelope for making that movie and just including an actor who just happened to be different and not having to make this huge concession in the movie about his character.
Right.
So,
like, there's no backstory, like a witch snuck into his bedroom when he was 10 and said, "You will never grow ever again."
Exactly. Yeah. They do explain how he lost his eye, though, which is, he's a reporter, and he's trying to take pictures of the mythical pig-faced woman.
Mm-hmm.
And her, Penelope's mom, Catherine O'Hara, like, stabs him in the eye or something because he's trying to take a picture.
That's brutal.
I know.
Good Lord.
So, yeah, it was just overall a really good film, and it's on Netflix Instant View. And I've been seeing previews for it for years. I don't know if it ever got to the theater, but...
Yeah, I remember seeing a preview for it, and I wanted to watch it. And now, I'm probably going to watch it tonight.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for that recommendation.
You're welcome. Yeah, I wish there were more movies like that.
Can I make a quick feminist movie recommendation?
Yeah, totally.
Okay, lots of people are going to disagree with me on this one. Legally Blonde. Just, you know, I went to law school, and... I often felt like a big law school outsider, and when I felt really bad about law school, I would watch Legally Blonde, and it would make me feel a little bit better.
It's a good movie.
It is
a good
movie.
I actually like it.
I mean, there's lots of stupid stuff in it.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's some, like, stereotypical, like, sorority girls and whatever, but the thing that I think is really, really great about it is that it portrays a woman who you're supposed to think is a stereotype, mm-hmm. but who really, you know... really busts out the stereotype. I mean, instead of saying you have to be, you know, a plain-looking, no-makeup-wearing, you know, serious feminist to be a good feminist, it basically says that, you know, you can be who you are, even if mm-hmm. that's, like, kind of a, you know, bubbly, blonde, tanned, big-boobed valley girl, and you know, that doesn't have to... determine everything about you. You can have your personality in your life, and you can still go on and be, you know, a great law student or lawyer, and you can still do great things. And one of the things that I really like, it's one in one of the earlier scenes where there's this kind of feminist character who says, mm-hmm. you know, oh, I've got degrees in women's studies and the history of combat, and she's got, like, brown hair and kind of pigtails, and she's wearing overalls or something like that. And, you know, she's not ugly. She's not the ugly dyke or whatever, but she's, she's, you can tell when
she's
you look at her,
feminist
she's kind
chick.
Of a feminist character. And she, and this character really judges Reese Witherspoon's character, based on how she looks and that she likes to wear pink and that she likes to wear makeup and everything. And I thought that was a really great send-up of feminists who judge like that and who say, you know, to be a good feminist, you can't wear makeup, you can't shave your legs, you have to have a high-powered career, you must, you know, you can't get married, you can't blah, 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 blah. Which I think is bullshit, because feminism is, to me, about empowering women and not, you know, empowering a certain class of women so that they can bully around all the other women.
Yeah, totally.
So, take that, Andrea Dworkin. and that was the long feminist rant.
Nice.
It
was. Well, I also like Legally Blonde because I think it's almost like you're watching her transformation into feminism, because it's like it's a movie about her realizing that life isn't all about that maybe what she wants isn't necessarily getting married to this douchebag, and that, you know, that she can do this for herself instead of for somebody else, and really learn to like it and actually be good at it. So
and that she doesn't have to completely change who she is to change her lot in life.
Yeah, so. And also the second one, even though it's meant to be not very good, the second one has a very distinct animal rights slant.
It does.
So.
It does.
Hurrah!
Yeah. So all in all, the Legally Blonde. I don't want to try
franchise.
Franchise. I give it a thumbs up.
Right on. Me too.
And much more so than Mamma Mia, which I give a thumbs down to. So, can we take a minute and talk about cilantro?
Sure.
Since that's a hot topic on everybody's
on
everybody's mind these days. So I recently discovered a website called IHateCilantro.com. I think that's what it's called. God, I hope that's what it's called.
Let's WTS. Let's GTS.
Yeah. So I posted about this website that I'd come across, which I thought was funny, and I was really surprised to be told that I was being really insensitive to people who hate cilantro. So what do you think? People who really hate cilantro, are they like the next maligned minority
group? They're the most oppressed group in our society today.
I mean, are they really, are they occupying that rung of the ladder that veganism occupied until its recent media darlinghood? Is that the problem? I mean, have we become the oppressors?
Clearly we have. I can actually speak from both sides of the coin here, if that's even a phrase that
cilantro
makes any sense.
Coin. Yeah. Sure.
I used to hate cilantro too. I used to hate it. And I decided one day, I was like, you know, there's no avoiding cilantro. I'm just going to learn to appreciate it. And I can't say definitively what I did, but I just made a more conscious effort to eat it and try to enjoy it. And now I do.
See, but what if you're one of those extreme cilantro haters? I mean, you're kind of like the vegetarian of cilantro haters. You know, they're kind of a minority, but they're not these militant, like, you know, crazies like vegans are. So what if you're like what if you hate cilantro to the level that it makes you violently throw up every time you have it? Ever. I mean, are you...
Well, you get really good at communicating with waiters. And reading labels. Welcome to the world of veganism.
But
deal.
Isn't that just another form of oppression, though?
Clearly.
All right.
So, I think the world should revolve around cilantro haters.
So basically,
picky eaters everywhere.
Basically, vegans should just count their blessings that at least they're not cilantro haters.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are, accept my condolences and most pure sympathy and, you know, solidarity. Okay, that was probably enough about cilantro. Though this website, which you should check out, is really quite extensive and impressive.
Yeah.
There are member profiles and news updates, and I think there's a store.
Yes, there's two stores. There's a cilantro store and a coriander store.
Oh, geez.
Coriander, no! No!
Jesus. You can get a lot of stuff with a picture of coriander with a red X through it.
You can get a pet shirt. You can get a shirt for your dog that says, I hate coriander. I can't help but think there's more worthwhile causes out there in the world.
See,
or maybe I'm just being terribly insensitive.
I think you're part of the problem.
Obviously.
When you say that.
You know, there are people in New Orleans that still need houses, but god damn it, I really hate that soapy taste. So
yeah. Maybe as a measure of good faith, we should be working on pressuring the legislatures of, you know, the various municipal, I don't know if this is a municipal, state, or federal kind of issue, but we should be pressuring legislators to pass ordinances requiring restaurants to identify the dishes that have cilantro.
Or maybe just all restaurants that serve cilantro and dishes are relegated to a certain neighborhood that has curfews.
That's a good idea.
And people who eat cilantro can wear, like, little, like a green patch on their sleeves, so that they're identifiable,
you know,
at all times.
But that's, doesn't that kind of bring back some nasty images of Nazi Germany?
No, not at all.
I mean, we don't want to.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I think we should be making people who like cilantro wear the armbands.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I misunderstood. I thought you meant make the cilantro haters wear the armbands.
No. Any restaurant that serves cilantro has to go in the cilantro ghetto.
Oh, okay.
And that's just how it's going to be from now on. You know, Prop 8, we're going to have to knock that from the top of the priority list.
Right.
For cilantro legislation.
Right. Good. Well, I'm glad that we settled that. And,
yeah,
you know, to anybody that may be offended by my wildly insensitive views on cilantro, I've reformed and changed my ways and apologize.
we're going to be actually running the cilantro Coriander No 5K this weekend.
Yeah, that's true.
Raising money for the Cilantro Orphan Foundation.
Yeah,
for kids who've been orphaned by cilantro.
Yeah.
I can't even talk about some of their stories without tearing up, so.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really sad thing. And I mean, it's just like the unspoken plague, really. Mm-hmm. I mean,
it's a silent killer. It really is.
It is, except barfing is pretty loud.
Well, it can be.
When you barf from cilantro, it's really loud.
If it's not loud, then you're faking.
Yeah, totally. And
it's that's probably some parsley or something, so
yeah,
just
no
deal.
But the cilantro thing, it's genetic, I heard.
Something
like
20%
of the population, just their genes are fucked and they don't perceive the taste of cilantro properly. So they're, I mean, is this kind of like genetic fascism?
Clearly.
Yeah.
You know what else is genetic? Asparagus pea.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I've never had that, so.
Well, clearly you don't have the gene for it.
Shit.
I don't think I do either.
Oh, well. Yeah, I never really got all those jokes like when people would say.
Yeah. I don't think we're missing out on much, surprisingly. Oh, so the other thing that you're... The movie rant brought up,
mm-hmm.
which I think is related, is that ad that I saw. There was an ad on TMZ that apparently I don't have TV and I don't.
Right.
I stopped reading gossip websites once I stopped having to procrastinate in the office.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of like a, you know, anytime something newsworthy happens, I'm kind of out of the loop. So apparently this dude beat up Rihanna or something. Whatever her name is. So this guy beat up Rihanna, the pop star.
Well, he's her boyfriend and also a pop star. Is that not right?
I guess.
I think so.
I don't know anything about this shit. Dang.
Yeah. And
so TMZ, in their infinite wisdom, said, hey, she's a victim of domestic violence. Let's see if we can get that police photograph showing the evidence of her injuries. And they did, and they posted it. But then, like, right... all around the picture of this poor beat-up woman who, you know, is famous so she doesn't get anonymity when she's a victim of a crime, there are these ads that were like... It was like, did somebody, like, vet this beforehand, because it's pretty, like, you know, contradictory. There's like a woman's ass with a big, like, hand mark on it, and it says smack the Oscars, or like spank the Oscars, or something like that. And it's just basically like, beat up women! Look at this poor picture of Rihanna.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, TMZ.
What on earth are you doing?
Should we pause this for a second, maybe? This has been extremely distracting.
Should we pause?
Yes. Could insert like a rewind the tape noise and then start again.
So okay, so we're gonna restart this.
We're gonna talk about some more feminist stuff.
Last night the Oscars, Alicia Keys, she came out and she was like trying to put all this like ethnic emphasis on everyone's name.
I heard that pretty much everybody who was hosting and all that stuff, they just really sucked last night. Like, I just heard that it was like really, everybody was like, this year is going to be totally different. It's going to be totally different. And then it wasn't. It was just the same and it was lame.
It was different because they had the past winners present. You know, usually they have the actors. Last year's best actor winner comes out and presents this year's best actress.
Yeah.
You know, so they have, like, the last year's winner of the opposite gender present. Mm-hmm. But this year they did this weird thing where they had, like, five past winners of the same gender come out and present. So, like, for best actress they had, like, Nicole Kidman and Halle Berry come out and, I forget who else. It was, you know, somebody who won in the 60s and, like, Whoopi Goldberg or something
really?
Like that.
So they needed five people to present the award.
Yeah, well, because there's five nominees. So each person would, like...
Oh.
And it was weird. It was very, it seemed like a group therapy session.
That sounds really stupid.
Like, but it was, like, it was seriously, like, a group therapy session, because they would come out, and each person would, like, give their speech about that nominee. And so they would come... They would, like, look at them in the eye, because they were in the front row, so they would, like, look them in the eye and be like, you know, like Amy Adams, and be like, Amy, you're such a talented up-and-coming actress, and your portrayal of this young nun was so stirring, blah, 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 you have touched all our hearts.
Oh my God.
They did that for every nominee, and it was totally, like, this, you know, like, therapeutic hand holding, like, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me,
oh,
you know?
Oh, Jesus.
And then so, four of them lost.
So basically it was a circle jerk.
It was. It was stage. Like therapy. It was really,
How off-putting. Way to go, Oscars.
You
turned me off yet again.
But I don't want to talk about the Oscars because that's stupid.
My husband just handed me a note asking if we cover interesting topics as well. And to that,
when we're
like,
not being interrupted, we usually do.
Anyway, so we were talking about Rihanna and being beat up by her boyfriend. They're not, like, married or anything, right?
Yeah, he's like her boyfriend, and apparently she denies that they're even together, but they're always together, and then he beat her up, so.
And TMZ's horrible, tasteless
webpage designing. They published the police photo of her after the assault, and then they published... There were actually two ads that I found offensive. There was the one with the woman's ass being spanked.
Right.
And then right below that, there was a SlimFast ad, which, you know, obviously wasn't as direct as, like, slapping women. Here's Rihanna, who's just been slapped. But it was... And I looked at it, and I was like, this is a giant cock and balls. Because it's like a SlimFast can, and then there's, like, two little biscuits or something at the bottom. And it was a total big fat chode. So, I don't know what was going on with the SlimFast ad, but, the slapping the Oscars thing was kind of rude. It was just like...
Yeah.
Seriously, don't you get it?
Well, I mean, on the one hand, that kind of media loves to... They love to feed on the drama of a story like, you know, one pop star beats up his pop star girlfriend.
Right.
And, like, really badly, you know? It's not just like... Oh shit, they got in a fight, they were drunk, he slapped her. Which would be terrible and inexcusable, but, like, this was, like, she went to the hospital, she was, like, you know, like, she was really beat up. And so they love to say, you know, oh, this is terrible, and, and just ramp up that drama when she is apparently apologizing for him and say, you know, refusing to, you know, if some dude were to beat me up and then I were to get national media coverage, you can bet that I would use that national media coverage to make sure that everybody in the entire country and hopefully the world knew what a fucking asshole the person who beat me up was. So I guess I just don't understand when somebody gets the shit kicked out of them and then refuses to say anything bad about
Well, you know, I can understand because I, you know, it's a pretty personal issue and, you know,
I
don't,
that's true.
I don't know that, I mean, I don't know about what she wants to say about this guy or whatever, but, you know, I don't even care that about seeing the photo and everything. It was just the fact that they would publish this photo.
Yeah.
And make this really, you know, obviously I'm not saying she should hide it away and be ashamed of it, but, you know, at the same time, I think it should be on her terms and not like, oh, we got this photo leaked from the police, let's put it up.
Yeah.
So.
That and the scumbag at the police that leaked the photo should be fired.
Totally.
Because that's scummy.
That is scummy.
But, yeah, I don't know. I guess media still hates women, eh?
Yep.
So.
Right on.
That sucks. And, I don't really know what to do about that. I'm kind of exhausted from ranting against Mamma Mia for the past 20 minutes. So, what was our next topic of discussion here on the,
I don't know, but I was going to say that the Grateful Dead are coming!
Are they really?
They just added another tour date, man!
Don't they live here?
Yeah, they... The Grateful Dead, it's like... paradox, because they should be called the Grateful Undead, because they're fucking zombies and they'll never fucking die.
Aren't they, like, for a long time, this is kind of blasphemy here in the Bay Area, and I'm sorry, but...
Oh, I don't care. Go for
it. I kind of thought that, wait, is one of the Grateful Dead one of Ben and Jerry?
Like, no.
Are they the same?
I don't think so.
Because I thought they were the same for a long time. I thought that...
Ben and Jerry probably got their start selling ice cream out of the back of their VW camper van in dead show parking lots or something like that. Hmm. But I don't think one of them was ever in the Dead. Yeah.
All right. Well. Shut up. Well, we could talk about one of the interesting things that I was just reminded of about my house.
Yes.
Which is that its previous resident hung himself.
Yes.
So maybe my
hanged.
House is hanged. Is that correct?
It is correct. Okay. Hanged.
But
you can say hung for other things.
So like I hung out with.
Yes.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I guess.
But hanged is specific to the act of killing somebody by hanging them with a rope until they are dead.
Yes. Okay. Well, the more you know.
Yes. I gotta get that jingle so I can put that in the podcast.
I'm sure
we have
there.
A lot of the more you know
we
moments.
Really do. We really do. We're smart and we're educating the people.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, oh, for fuck's sake.
That is ridiculous.
Oh, God.
We could go record in my car.
The really bad thing is that he thinks he's being really considerate. He has no idea that we can hear that in here. He's no idea. Apologies, this is, like I said, the extreme home makeover version of the podcast. And we're going to talk about haunted houses.
Yeah.
So what do you think? Do you get a haunted feeling from
this? I don't know. Have you ever seen a ghost here?
No, I haven't. I mean, it's kind of small, and I was kind of thinking about it, and I was like, well, if we were to have a ghost here, I mean, it wouldn't have anywhere to go. Like, it would be a very annoying place to haunt, right?
Yeah, it's... Most ghosts, inhabit one area of a house.
Yeah.
But it's like...
I mean,
it's all right here.
Yeah, if he hung himself, I mean, chances are his feet were either, like, right where my head is now, or... about 4 feet to the right. I mean, if he were to haunt that area, I mean, it would just be annoying for him. He'd be standing on the coffee table.
Yeah.
and
listening to Mike Saw all day.
Well, yeah, exactly. Or like watching anime with us for Mike's new job. So I don't think this place is haunted, but I was never totally sure, but I think that maybe my best friend's house was haunted
by
something weird when I was a kid. Because this one time we had a sleepover, and it was her, and she was like 10 months older than me, and then her little brother was like 10 months younger than mm-hmm. me. So the three of us would hang out together all the time. And we had a sleepover one time, and we were watching like Ghostbusters or whatever, which was our favorite movie
mm-hmm.
of all time. And it was really late, and we were down in the basement with like the TV and like all curled up on the couches and stuff like that. And we were getting tired, and we finished the movie and turned off the TV, and there were these like two glowing red spots on the TV that looked kind of like eyes, and they were like looking out from the TV, and we had no idea what they were, and you know, we're like, is that just a weird TV thing?
Yeah, maybe.
Or is that something else? So we figured that it was something else and that the house was haunted. And and I think we tried to hold a seance the next day, but it didn't really work.
That's awesome.
So, what are your haunted house stories? Or ghost stories?
I don't know that I've ever been to any haunted houses, but my big ghost story is in the town where I grew up, there's a movie, well, it used to be an opera house, and then it was converted into a movie theater, and then it was converted into, like, a punk venue.
Cool.
Yeah. And, like, Gwar plays there every year, and, you know, a lot of bands get their start there, actually. But it was built around the turn of the century, like, 1900s, and I think it burned down in 1909 or 1908, so there are some ghosts from that.
Hmm.
And it has an underground tunnel. You can go into, like, the dressing rooms and then down into the basement, and there's an underground tunnel that leads kitty corner across the intersection of the street to the Italian deli and restaurant. And it turns out they used that tunnel during Prohibition to smuggle liquor between the market and the theater. So I think, you know, it's a very well-inhabited, a very historic theater, and it's been through a lot of changes. And every year the owner, Tom, brings a psychic in to, like, talk with the ghosts and talk about, you know, and kind of, like, do a peace ceremony, because a lot of the ghosts apparently really don't like the loud punk rock and metal that gets played at the shows and everything. But I used to be in a Rocky Horror Picture Show cast, and apparently the ghosts really liked us because it was, like, theater. And they viewed us as, like, legitimate artists.
Who were you in the Rocky Horror Picture Show?
When I first started, I was, like, 16 or 17, so they didn't want me doing anything really racy. So mm-hmm. I was Riff Raff.
Nice.
I had short, bleach blonde hair at the time. And then once I turned 18, I started playing Janet.
Yeah. Nice. Very nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun. And I did a lot of the costumes and stuff like that. But yeah, there were a lot of ghosts. And, you know, it was one of those very, like, old grand style theaters. It had a big lobby and it had this huge, like, elaborate two-way staircase leading to the balcony and mm-hmm. to the restrooms. There's a huge, like, enormous floor-to-ceiling, like, two-story mirror in the lobby. And the stage had two towers on either side, which you see a lot in the older theaters.
Yeah.
And you can actually, like, climb up to the towers. If you're facing the stage in the audience, the tower on the right-hand side was the one that I always went up in. Apparently, the left tower was really bad, and it had a really mean, like, angry ghost in it. And there was also a restroom behind the stage near the left tower that nobody ever used because it was haunted. And someone I know went in there once and was, like, peeing, and he felt somebody, like, claw across his stomach, and there was nobody behind him. So that was really freaky. There was, you know, again, this ghost person would come every year. So, like, and obviously a lot of people I knew had seen different ghosts, so they were, like, well-established characters.
Mm-hmm.
There was, like, a teenage couple that lived in the balcony.
Mm-hmm.
There was a really angry, like, fucked up female ghost in the women's bathroom. Some people had seen her. I think she, like, they said she was, like, a naked, obese woman. And, like, someone was even chased by her downstairs once.
Oh, my God.
I didn't see any of that stuff. I think there was also a little boy in the balcony. And then a couple of other ghosties. But I didn't see any of the ghosts myself, but I did have a weird experience there once. We had a sleepover at the theater, and, you know, they showed us how to run everything. We already knew a lot of stuff because we'd been, you know, performing there for a long time. And so we knew where the main switchboard was behind the snack bar. So we went to turn on the lights once it got dark, and all the fuses were on, but the women's bathroom light wouldn't go on. And the light in the ceiling, as well as the light over the door, which are two separate circuits, they wouldn't go on together at the same time. So that was weird. So I didn't want to go up there in the dark, you know, with an angry, naked, obese woman up there. And then the other weird thing was we were down in the main area of the theater. And obviously, because it's an old theater, it had a really high ceiling. And I looked up at one of the lights, and I saw two glowing orbs, like, circling each other, like, going down from the lights, mm-hmm. like, in the pattern of a helix, maybe. So I kind of, like, rubbed my eyes like they do in cartoons, and mm-hmm. I looked again, and I saw it again. And I was like, I'm going to sit outside for a few minutes and, you know, just kind of calm down. But that was the scariest thing that ever happened to me. So, yeah, that's the big ghost attraction in my town.
I've been thinking still open. We should take the podcast on the road.
We should. I mean,
especially now that both of our houses have been deemed completely unsuitable for recording.
Oh my God.
What else did we have on our agenda?
Did you get my emails about funny t-shirts?
I did, but I couldn't really think of any except for the one that I bought for Mike that you were
there
for.
That was a pretty good one.
Yeah, so when Erica came up to Edmonton to visit me before I came down here, we actually tried to record the first version of this podcast, and I don't know.
It ended horribly.
Yes. I think we both got a little drunk.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, God only knows what happened. But anyways, we went thrift shopping to all of Edmonton's most annoying thrift stores, and I bought a t-shirt for Mike that said, I came, I drank, I offended.
Has he ever worn it?
No, he thinks it's horrible.
I can't believe that Mike would find that horrible.
Mike wears a shirt that says, don't mess with Texas.
Maybe the stark, brutal truth of it is too shocking for him.
Maybe. Whatever. He needs to suck it up. But no, he's never worn it. It could also be that the color is not really his style. And you had a t-shirt in mind.
Yeah, it was a t-shirt Pranjal saw. And it was in Hong Kong. There was this Indonesian nanny with her, you know, her little hijab headdress. Mm-hmm. And she had this blonde-haired little girl with her. And the nanny was wearing a hot pink t-shirt that said Jihad across the front. I went to the airport with my boyfriend to pick somebody up, a friend of mine. And it was in the international arrivals hall, which I love because there's always, like, so many people from everywhere, and they're all, like, reuniting with their family or their loved ones, and it's, like, a really happy place to be. And this kid was there picking up his dad, and I think they looked South Asian. I think they were, like, an Indian family. And the kid was, like, maybe 15 or 16. And he sees his dad coming out of the gate, and they have this, like, really tender, like, you know, Dad, I missed you. And he, like, gives him a hug, and his dad, like, loves him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he gives him a big hug, and he's, like, smiling, and he can't believe how much he's grown. And the kid is wearing a shirt that says, the Iron Chef of Pounding Vag. And his dad just like, son, it's so good to see you. You're such a good boy.
Where the hell did he get that shirt?
Have
you
I don't
seen
know.
This for sale? Because I want one.
Well, I was like, that is amazingly offensive. And then I realized, I don't know why I didn't remember this the first time, but I was rewatching Superbad the other day, and it's a line from Superbad.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's talking about how he wants to be the Iron Chef of Pounding Vag. And I was like, oh my God, it's the t-shirt.
That is amazing.
Yeah. And there was another shirt I saw in Hong Kong. Again, Hong Kong's a great place for shirts.
And it was a total geek shirt. It said something like, what year was the Hindenburg? It was like 36 or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
It had a series of natural disasters. It said something like Hindenburg, 1936, Hiroshima, 1945, Windows 95. It was such a geek shirt. It was really dorky.
I think the t-shirt is probably my favorite mode of expression.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, any girl who has come up through the punk scene and who, you know, has grown up going to shows and blah, 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 knows that particular kind of pain and frustration mm-hmm. that comes with going to see your favorite band, especially if that band is, like, supposed to be, like, a really progressive, political, like, awesome band. And then going with your money and your hot little hand up to the merch table and having them, like, shove a youth large in your face. And you're just like, what the fuck am I gonna do with this?
Yeah.
Like, I'm 15 years old and I weigh 85 pounds. Like, I cannot wear this shirt. Good day.
good day to you, sir.
So, like, I want to spend money on your record label and on your bands. I want to support your bands. But, like, I'm, you know, frankly just not going to wear a t-shirt that is 8 sizes too big for me. Am I being that unreasonable? Really?
Obviously you are. Yeah.
But you know that pain, right?
Like, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And it's a huge dilemma for me because I actually really don't want to support American Apparel, but there's no company that fills the gap, really.
Yeah, and certainly not in that price range. I know, that, like, my band, we were able to buy American Apparel shirts for cheap.
Hmm.
You know, we didn't have to spend, like, I think there was maybe, we looked into a few other manufacturers, but it was all something like $15 a shirt.
Wow.
Because they were really small scale manufacturers and, you know, they were doing it all by hand and all, you know, that here.
Sucks.
And maybe there are better things out there right now, but
I hope so.
I mean, it's
because you're right. They really do. You know, they really do fit t-shirts to women. Interesting story though. Their first fit models when they were first starting out were strippers.
Really?
Because their first headquarters was around the street from around the corner from a strip joint. So they would go to the strip joint and have the strippers model the t-shirts, and that's who their first fit models were.
So are you saying I'm built like a stripper?
Yes.
If I fit into American Apparel clothes?
But yeah, I have a lot of issues with American Apparel because, you know, definitely the women, the sexism issue. I mean, not only because Dove Charney is supposedly, like, you know, this, like, raving, you know,
lecherous creep.
Yeah. But also because that obviously expresses itself in its advertising. And plus, it's just so fucking hipster, you know? It's
yeah, like, oh, I know. Ugh. I know.
But also because he's anti-union.
Yeah.
He's held anti-union rallies. And granted, I think, you know, I think his workers are well paid enough. I know they're certainly paid above minimum wage.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that they get really good benefits. And I know there's a waiting list to work there as a sewer.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying his workers should be in a union, but they should have that option.
Mm-hmm.
And if, you know, if he's treating them so well, he shouldn't be afraid of unions. Because if he's treating them well enough, they're not going to want to join a union. Yeah, he's just a creepy dude. I think if they just took him out of the equation, it would be a great company.
Yeah. Well, maybe one day he'll, you know,
Die
of a hipster coke overdose or something like that.
We should do a weird shit in Jordan's house segment.
Oh, yeah. And then maybe sign off.
Yeah.
Okay. Should we pause it for just a second while
totally.
Find something weird?
All right. It's time for weird shit in Jordan's house.
Yep.
Do you like the sassy, I don't know if you remember the music I picked for it. It's one of the jingles that comes with GarageBand.
I don't remember the...
It's in the urban music section.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, it was good. I like that. I thought it really captured the vibe of our crib.
Yeah. All right, so. Cue the funky jingle. And what funky stuff do you have?
What do I have today? Today, I have Incredible True Life Murderers, a set of 40 trading cards. On the back it says, here they are, 40 to fear, murderers.
And who are some of the lovely murderers we can expect to meet?
Some of the murderers are Richard Vamp of Sacto Chase, who I believe is from Sacramento.
I would guess.
There's a tiny print. Yeah, there's a lot of That's writing on the back
Richard
here.
The Vamp of Sacto Chase's entire life story.
Holy shit. He believed he was a vampire and was in and out of mental institutions. He killed rabbits and drank their blood.
Mm.
And then he started killing people and drinking their blood. And then he would take out their eyes. And he took home a 22-month-old baby and kept it in the fridge.
Mm.
And the police busted him. They broke into the blood-soaked den of gore and horror. Richard threw the baby's parts at them, and they scuffled, and he was dragged to the station.
I like how these cards are written totally, you know, with the utmost of journalistic... Objectivism.
These are inflammatory cards right here.
it has a listing of all the cards?
Here's
nice.
The index, including David Berkowitz, Ted Bundy,
nice.
Richard Chase, who we just heard about, John Lindley Frazier, Ed Gein,
John Gacy,
the Green River Killer,
Myra Hindley, I was just going to ask if she was in there,
Jack the Ripper,
nice,
Lee Harvey Oswald, he's not really that scary, he's no. kind of, but... Anyway,
wasn't there a theory that he was framed?
Yeah, so he might not even be eligible.
Yeah,
and
this isn't an assassinator deck.
Yeah,
this isn't murderers deck.
There's a difference between assassins and murderers.
There
don't you
is.
Think?
Yes,
I do. I mean, a murderer is kind of
killing for the fun of it, whereas assassination,
yeah,
it's
or killing because they're too stupid to get out of the situation or something like that. Whereas assassins are more, you know. Motivated by either money or politics, I think.
True.
Yeah. So.
Or the demon dog that lives under their bed.
Right. Or their insatiable thirst for blood. right. So that's my weird thing. These and so your thing is.
My thing
is not as family friendly.
It's not as family friendly as the deck of murderer trading cards.
Right.
This is a DVD titled. Matters of Size, the Ultimate Guide to Penis Enlargement.
Right. And I feel honor-bound at this point to step in and say, Mike got this through his old job, not that he went out and purchased it.
So and, he says.
Yeah.
So he says.
So he's not looking to enlarge his equipment.
This says that you will learn all the classified secrets that most porn stars have protected for years.
Hmm.
The same secrets the adult industry does not want you to know. So I'm wondering, like, does the adult porn industry have, like, a CIA or something? I mean, like, what's so secretive about these dong exercises?
I guess if everybody had a 12-inch rod, then it would be
they
much
would still
harder.
Buy porn.
It's true, but it would be harder to get a job as a porn star. I mean, guys like Ron Jeremy, who pretty much, you know, all they had going for them was that they had...
Yeah, but that... Think about the benefits for us would be there'd be more handsome men.
Like, we wouldn't have to look at Ron Jeremy.
Exactly.
Anymore. Sorry, Ron Jeremy. I understand you're an icon and everything, but...
If you have always wished you could have a long, thick, powerful penis like a porn star, then this will be the most important DVD you will ever purchase. This is quite a write-up. This is like a small novel on the
back
of this DVD.
Yeah, it really is. We both chose things with too much text on them.
I like, everything is capitalized, by the way. Not only will this DVD give you a longer, thicker, more powerful-looking penis.
Oh, so not actually more powerful, just more powerful-looking.
Yeah.
That's a little disappointing.
But you will also enjoy other extraordinary rewards as well. And I... We haven't seen this, but...
We've only seen the still that was left on the TV screen for us when we came back from...
Yeah, it looks like a lot of kneading, like a breadstick.
Yeah.
And a lot of stretching, and it looks painful.
No, it doesn't look pleasant at all.
I'm kind of happy that, you know, I don't feel the need for a large penis myself, and...
Yeah, I mean, really, all
if I had a penis, I wouldn't be that concerned about, you know, stretching it out every day.
I would hope.
I would hope so, too. You never know,
I guess, until you have one.
But I guess the female equivalent is, you know, how big your boobs are. And I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm glad that I don't care how big my boobs are.
Yeah.
And that I'm not, you know, doing the...
It's a terrible
increase
burden.
My bust.
Shall we call it a day?
We should. And I just want to let our listeners know that they can look forward with great anticipation to our next episode, because Well, you as well. We will both be reporting back from WonderCon in San Francisco.
True.
We will have more nerd stories.
Oh, I'm bringing my camera.
Good.
Yes.
I hope so.
Yes.
I'm going on Friday to see Will Arnett and Henry Winkler. And you are going on Saturday?
I'm going on Saturday. I can't even remember right now who's there, but I think maybe Wendy Pinney. Who drew ElfQuest comics, which I was obsessed with as a young, dorky person. And somebody else from Mad Magazine.
Sergio Aragones.
All right.
We're going to see them, so we will we'll let you know.
Awesome. And hopefully we'll get lots of pictures of awkward, chubby preteens in anime costumes.
Yes. I really hope to see some cosplay people.
Oh, God. Me too. All right. Well, yeah, we'll have the full report on WonderCon next episode 7.
Yeah.
Yes.
Signing off. The luckiest episode.
True.
All right. Goodbye, world. Goodbye.
It's a final countdown.